in all its majestic beauty while mixing in the extensive world of everything geek. This is Galaxy Geeks.
Welcome back, everybody, for episode 19.
Episode 19.
Yeah. All right, everybody.
These impromptu openings are the best part of the podcast, I guarantee you. Like, there's no other part of the podcast that's more entertaining than the opening.
And there's no other podcast out there like the Galaxy Geeks. I'm just saying. It's
Now that you mentioned that, this is the Galaxy Geeks.
Yeah, it's a cosmic fact, actually. Yeah. The Galaxy Geeks.
Yeah.
It's true, though. Yep. There's no one else like us.
What's your name?
I'm Lewis Rankin.
And I'm Brandon Stewart.
Welcome back, everybody.
Hey, so we're talking a little bit about space missions today. We were just talking about this not that long ago. Of all the random facts in the universe that I am studied up on...
Sorry, I had to close the window.
It's okay. That I'm studied up on, our own missions from Earth are probably the thing that I know about the least. And I feel terrible.
Like I said before, you know, Einstein had a problem with simple stuff. And not saying that this stuff is simple, but since we, Galaxy Geeks, along with all the other people on board, along with celebrities and stuff, you know, this is a big deal. It's we're out traveling against other galaxies and stuff. So.
Well, I think we just think on a much bigger scale, you know? We're not thinking about the tiny things.
Yeah, but hey, we're gonna give it some precious time right now.
Yeah, we are. So what's up first?
We're going to talk about ACE.
Okay, what's ACE stand for?
Advanced Composition Explorer, baby.
And this is a satellite?
It is. And I'm going to tell you its mission summary. Is that fine with you?
Go ahead.
Everyone's sitting down with the popcorn.
I'm ready.
Okay, the Advanced Composition Explorer, also known as ACE, is an Explorer mission that was launched on a McDonnell Douglas Delta II 7920 launch vehicle on August 25th, 1997 from the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. The Earth is constantly bombarded with a stream of accelerated particles arriving not only from the sun, but also from interstellar and galactic sources.
You love that. I know you do. Galactic.
But also from the interstellar and galactic sources.
Okay, that's just so everybody knows that wasn't a celebrity guest. That was Lewis.
Yeah. I like to do my impressions from time to time, it's always good to have the real deal on the show.
Yeah.
Lemon Grab and
Lumpy Space Lumpy Princess. They were a hoot.
They didn't cause no trouble. I mean, Lemon Grab ended the show just fine.
Yeah.
Study of these energetic particles contributes to our understanding of the formation and evolution of the solar system, as well as the astrophysical processes involved. Now, the Advanced Composition Explorer, also known as ACE, I will say it again, spacecraft carrying 6 high-resolution sensors and 3 monitoring instruments samples low-energy particles of solar origin and high-energy galactic particles with a collecting power 10 to 1,000 times greater than past experiments.
Okay, sweet.
Galactic particles.
The Galactic Empire.
You know, let me just say that ACE orbits the L1, which is the Lagrange point.
Okay, can you explain that just a little bit for people who might not know what that means?
What the Lagrange point is, say you take our Earth and you take the moon. So if you were out there right in between the edge of the Earth's gravitational pull and the moon's gravitational pull, that's a Lagrange point.
Okay.
Where you kind of hover. You're not being pulled by either one.
So this is a special point for a lot of satellites because they're not going to necessarily be pulled by one or the other.
Amen.
Okay.
Now, this is the point which is a point of Earth-Sun gravitational equilibrium about 1.5 million kilometers from Earth and 148.5 million kilometers from the sun. From its location at the Lagrange 1, ACE has a prime view of the solar wind, interplanetary magnetic field, and higher energy particles accelerated by the sun, as well as particles accelerated in the heliosphere and the galactic regions beyond. Now, ACE also provides near real-time 24/7 continuous coverage of solar winds, the parameters and solar energetic particles intensities, which is also just referred to as space weather.
Mm-hmm.
When reporting space weather, ACE provides an advanced Warning, about 1 hour of geomagnetic storms that can overload power grids, disrupt communications on Earth, and present a hazard to astronauts. So this baby is kind of like a thing that warns us of galactic particles, you know, coming from the
sun. So Ace is basically a dignified space weatherman.
Yes, and you know, China's been wiped out from solar bursts from the sun.
Why didn't we warn them?
You know, you could warn them, but I mean, there's no stopping the sun, baby.
Yeah.
The spacecraft has enough propellant on board to maintain an orbit at Lagrange 1 until 2024.
Holy monkey. So it was launched in 1997, still has enough propellant on board for another at least eight years.
Yes.
Careful now. Do the math.
Well, actually,
I panicked a little bit right there.
No, 9 years. Wow. I went back.
Well, no, I was rounding forward to 2016.
Okay, you're cool then.
Thanks, buddy.
Okay.
Oh, you're cool.
You're cool.
Thanks. I needed that. I needed your reassurance.
Okay, at this moment in time, can I squeeze in a joke?
Shoot. Yeah, go ahead.
Why? Okay, you got all kinds of toilet paper out there. They have Star Trek toilet paper. Did you know that?
I didn't.
Do you know why they call it Star Trek toilet paper?
I'm lost, no.
Well, it circles Uranus looking for Klingons.
That was pretty good.
Thank you.
Okay.
How about you tell us some science goals?
Okay, so one of the prime objectives of ACE is obviously to measure and compare the composition of several samples of matter, including the solar corona, the solar wind, like we mentioned, and other interplanetary particle populations, the local interstellar medium, and galactic matter. Now, while there has been great progress with ACE in addressing these objectives, the changing conditions over the solar cycle present new opportunities. In addition, new observations and theoretical advances, new missions, and the evolving goals of NASA and the heliophysics theme have introduced new challenges, including the goal of achieving the scientific understanding needed to forecast space weather in the coming years when humans will venture beyond Earth's protective magnetosphere.
Mm.
Here are a few scientific instruments that ACE is performing currently. It has comprehensive and coordinated composition determinations.
That's a tongue twister.
Yeah, say that five times fast. Just try it. Just try it. Let's be kids.
Okay.
Ready? Here we go.
Comprehensive and coordinated composition determinations. Comprehensive and coordinated composition determinations. Comprehensive and coordinated composition determinations. Comprehensive and coordinated composition determinations.
One more.
Comprehensive and coordinated composition determinations. Damn you.
That was pretty good, man.
You had to make me do it, didn't you? One other thing it does is it observes broad dynamic ranges and investigations of the origin and evolution of solar and galactic matter. Now, the last time that we have been updated on ACE's mission was back in January of 2012. ACE has been at the Lagrange 1 point for over 14 years now. And the spacecraft and instruments are still working very well, with the exception of the Sapeka instrument. Due to the failure of the valves that control gas flow through the instrument, active control of the Sapeka proportional counter was lost, and delivery of science data from Sapeka ended on February 4th, 2005. This instrument was turned off permanently on April 20th, 2011, because it just couldn't handle it.
Oh.
Right. A fuel use strategy has been implemented that will allow continued operations through the year 2024, like we mentioned. And as of October 2010, 635 peer-reviewed papers have been published by ACE science team members. So we know a lot about it. We're keeping tabs on it.
Nice.
And it's still up there kicking.
So Ace Ventura is doing a good... I mean, sorry. ACE is doing a good
job.
We can
call it Ventura.
Ventura.
Sitting out there, you know, waiting to warn Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, there's solar bursts getting ready to come and wipe you on your butt, you know, so...
Yeah.
Next up, everybody, is
coffee. Remember,
AIM. Okay,
you haven't even had your second cup.
No, you know, I remember first grade, teachers always like, you know, kids, you know, make sure when you go to the bathroom, you know, be clean about it, you know, and boys, you need to learn how to aim. And it'd be all over the screen. I'm like,
who says that to
little, I know how to aim.
Who says that to little boys? You don't talk about that.
Yeah, that's how teachers were back in the day, man.
If you sprinkle and you tinkle, times. Be a sweetie and wipe the seedy.
Yes! Love it. My dad has a sign hanging up in his bathroom. How about you start this off about AIM? What is AIM's purpose? What is AIM's goals and objectives?
Okay.
Lay it on me.
AIM is a satellite that we have. It stands for Aeronomy of Ice and the Mesosphere. And AIM is the first satellite mission dedicated to the study of noctilucent or quote-unquote night-shining clouds. Let's call it that because that's so much easier.
I like the night-shining clouds.
Also called polar mesospheric clouds, or PMCs.
It has C.
What was that? It has provided the first global scale view of the clouds over the entire 2007 Northern Hemisphere season.
Right on.
With an unprecedented resolution of 5 kilometers by 5 kilometers and is nearing completion of observations in the Southern Hemisphere season. Despite a significant increase in PMC research in recent years, relatively little is known about the basic physics of these clouds at the quote-unquote edge of space and why they are changing. They have increased in brightness over time, and are being seen more often and appear to be occurring at lower latitudes than ever before. So basically, AIM is more or less something that we have just
to check out night shining clouds.
Yes, just keeping an eye on the clouds that are right at the edge of space, you know?
I like that.
I'm distracting you, I know.
I like that.
Yep. You want to continue?
No.
Okay. Okay, so the overall goal of the baseline missions for AIM is to determine why PMCs form and vary. And since the launch of AIM on April 25th, 2007, significant progress has been made in achieving this goal, and that progress continues at a rapid rate. The AIM data is of very high quality and has changed our view of PMCs and their environment after only one Northern Hemisphere season of observations. The startling similarity between the PMC structure observed by CIPS and that seen in tropospheric clouds suggests that the mesosphere may share some of the same dynamical processes responsible for weather near Earth's surface.
Uh-huh.
And if this similarity holds up in further analysis, it introduces an entirely different view of potential mechanisms responsible for PMC formation and variability.
Wow, you know, AIM has provided the most detailed picture of NH clouds ever collected.
Really?
Ever. Okay. Now, the clouds appear every day and widespread and are highly variable on hourly to daily timescales. PMC brightness varies over horizontal scales of a few kilometers, and because of the AIM high horizontal resolution, we now know that over small regions, the clouds are 10 times brighter than measured by previous space-based instruments.
Breathe!
A previously suspected but never before seen, baby, population of very small ice particles was measured that is believed to be responsible for strong radar echoes from the summertime mesosphere.
So y'all want to know what an echo is? Okay. You know, whenever you yell down into like a canyon and it goes, hello, hello, hello. That's an echo. Okay, continue.
Okay. Mesospheric ice occurs in one continuous layer extending from below the main peak at 83 kilometers up to around 90 kilometers, baby. Mesospheric cloud structures resolved for the first time by the SIPS, CIPS imager, exhibit complex features present in normal tropospheric clouds.
Did you know, Lewis, that AIM has been selected for extended mission funding following the 2-year Explorer baseline mission?
Really?
Yes. The extension from June 2009 through September 2012 has allowed tracking the evolution of mesospheric clouds for an additional 7 seasons and provided data to address key outstanding questions, including...
Are the variation in PMCs that can be explained by changes in solar irradiation and particle input? What changes in mesospheric properties are responsible for north-south differences in PMC features? What controls internal variability in PMC season duration and latitude extent? What is the mechanism of teleconnection between winter temperatures and summer hemisphere PMCs? What is the global occurrence rate of gravity waves outside the PMC domain?
I don't know any answer to any of those questions.
You know, it's time for a Neil pizza. So let's lay down the science. Let's lay down science goal and the objectives, and we'll hurry up and get out here and get our pizza.
Okay. The overall goal of AIM was to experiment to resolve why polar mesospheric clouds, or PMCs, like we mentioned, form and why they vary. And by measuring PMCs in the thermal, chemical, and dynamical environment in which they form, mm-hmm. we will quantify the connection between these clouds and the meteorology of the polar mesosphere. And in the end, it doesn't even matter. No, this will provide the basis for study of long-term variability in the mesospheric climate and its relationship to global change. Everybody wants a nice relationship, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Now,
so why is this any different?
Well, the result of AIM will be a rigorous validation of predictive models that can be reliable by the past PMC changes and present trends as indicators of global change. This goal will be achieved by measuring PMC abundances, spatial distribution, partial size distributions, gravity wave activity, cosmic dust influx to the atmosphere, and precise vertical profile measurements of temperature, H2O, OH, CH4, O3, CO2, NO, and aerosols. This data can be obtained only by a complement of instruments on an orbiting spacecraft because of the need for global coverage and because extinction and foreground emissions compromise optical sensing for the ground.
Woo!
Woo, baby! Hey! Now, just tell me something important about NASA.
I don't know why that was so damn funny.
Just go on, man.
Okay.
Way off subject, but...
All right, you want to hear this? So check this out. NASA's SEC program, its overall goal is to understand the coupling between the heliosphere and Earth's atmosphere. AIM deals with how does solar variability affect life and society? How does it, Lewis? How do we know? We don't. Okay, so this is a key element of the Living with the Star initiative. The key to this quest is an improved understanding of the upper atmospheric regions that shield the planet and its biosphere from harmful solar radiation and particles. The study of anthropogenic influences on the upper atmosphere is an important aspect. PMCs are of special interest as they are sensitive to both global change and solar and terrestrial influences. Also, a recent National Research Council book entitled The Atmospheric Sciences Entering the 21st Century notes the need to closely monitor the occurrence and latitudinal extent of PMCs as a marker of global change. I think that studying these PMC clouds is important, and to a degree, because we have to know what we're dealing with if we ever plan to leave this planet. As soon as you leave the planet, you're dealing with radiation from the sun, from other variables and things like that.
You know, in the long run, the Earth is going to be okay. You know, it's us killing ourselves by polluting the air and too much carbon dioxide in the Earth's atmosphere. Mm-hmm.
I wonder...
By learning by this, if there's another planet we colonize on, how to treat its atmosphere.
I wonder what the Earth would look like if we had never colonized it, if we were never even here, if we could just look at it from space.
It right would now. Probably be a beauty. It'd probably mm-hmm. be a wonderful... Green.
Mm-hmm. Well, it still is beautiful in some
thriving
ways.
With all kinds of species mm-hmm. that we never made extinct. Mm-hmm. But you know what, everybody? We will be right back with some more.
We will be right back with some more.
And just remember. That circles Uranus looking for Klingons, Star Trek paper toilet paper does. And everyone got to know what an echo is.
Yeah, they did. All right, we'll be back here in a little bit. Stick around. Welcome back to episode 19 of Galaxy Geeks. I'm Brendan Stewart.
And I'm Lewis Regan.
And we've had a lot of coffee.
Yes, we have. Not enough, though. Hey.
No, you've had more than me. And if that's not evident, just wait till I start getting into this information, and then you'll see Lewis will kind of creep in, and he'll start talking a lot about just what
just kind of, you have a very specific style of of podcasting when you've had more than two cups of coffee.
Yes, it's very beautiful, and like we're bringing forth a rainbowness of out of our mouths.
That was a nice try of poetry there, but I think you can do better. I think you can do better.
We are bringing forth a cosmic verbalness.
Okay. I like it. Okay, we'll go with that.
Okay.
Bringing forth. So we talked about ACE, and we talked about AIM, and now we're moving on. Next on our list, we're going to talk about Aqua.
Aquaman has helped build this.
He did. It's a proven fact. We have a signature on it. So Aqua is not a acronym for anything like the last two, but we will get into why it's named Aqua. I'm going to start here.
Brant.
So NASA's commitment to studying the Earth as a global system continues with the Aqua spacecraft, representing a key contribution by NASA to the U.S. Global Change Research Program. Aqua. Aqua carries six state-of-the-art instruments. I like that we're on the same page here.
I love it.
That's
the cosmic verbalness right there.
Yeah. And we're bringing it forth, right? Yes. Right. So these are to observe the Earth's oceans, atmosphere, land, ice and snow covers, and vegetation, providing high measurement accuracy, spatial detail, and temporal frequency. This comprehensive approach to data collection, Lewis, enables scientists to study the interactions among the four spheres of the Earth system, the oceans, the land, the atmosphere, and the biosphere.
Hot.
Yes.
That's some hot stuff.
So, let me tell you something.
Tell it.
If you didn't know, Aqua is Latin for water.
Waterman.
And the reason that this satellite is named Aqua is because it collects a large amount of information about the Earth's water cycle. In particular, the Aqua data will include information on water vapor and clouds in the atmosphere, precipitation from the atmosphere, soil wetness.
Easy.
On the land, glacial ice on the land, sea ice in the oceans, snow cover on both land and sea ice, and surface waters throughout the world's oceans, bays, and lakes. And such information will help scientists improve the quantification of the global water cycle and examine such issues as whether or not the cycling of water might be accelerating.
In addition to information about the water cycle, Aqua also provides information on many additional elements of the Earth's system. Aqua enables studies of the fluxes of radiation from the sun and from the Earth that combine to constitute the Earth's radiation balance. It also enables studies of small particles in the atmosphere termed aerosols, and such trace gases in the atmosphere as ozone, carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and methane from straight out of the cows. The trace gases each have a potential contribution to global warming, whereas the aerosols are more likely to have a cooling effect.
Now, what else does Aquaman provide?
Well, he also provides observations on vegetation. If I was a poet,
I already know it.
That's right. Phytoplankton and dissolved organic matter in the oceans, and the temperatures of the air, land, and water. All of these measurements will have the potential to contribute to improved understanding of the changes occurring in the global climate and the role of the interactions among the various elements of the climate system.
Baby. So, also one of the most exciting of the potential practical benefits likely to derive from the Aqua data is improved weather forecasting. Aqua carries, Lewis, a sophisticated sounding system that will allow determination of atmospheric temperatures around the world to an accuracy of 1 degree Celsius in 1 kilometer thick layers throughout the troposphere, the lowest portion of the atmosphere. The troposphere extends to an altitude of about 10 to 15 kilometers, depending on location, and contains most of the global cloud cover. The anticipated 1 degree Celsius accuracy far exceeds current accuracies from satellite observations, and in conjunction with the moisture profiles also obtainable from the Aqua sounding system, will offer the potential of improved weather forecasting. NASA is working with the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and the European Center for Medium Range Weather Forecasts to facilitate the incorporation of the Aqua data in their weather forecasting efforts.
Nice.
Now, what else is Aqua doing?
It's in line, or they have a formation of flying with other spacecrafts. Now, because NASA has plans to launch a substantial number of Earth-observing spacecraft over the next 15 years, it would be more efficient to operate these spacecraft in groups. As opposed to single entities.
Well, it's always better to work in group, right?
Right. You messed me up, man.
I'm sorry. Okay. I'm sorry.
Enhanced formation flying technology will enable a large number of spacecraft to be managed with a minimum of ground support. The result will be a group of spacecraft with the ability to detect navigation errors and cooperatively agree on the appropriate maneuver to maintain their desired positions and orientations. Formation flying technology enables many small, inexpensive spacecraft to fly in formation and gather concurrent science data in a virtual platform. This concept lowers total mission risk, everybody, increases science data collection, and adds considerably flexibility to future Earth and space science missions.
So now, let me ask, what's the name of this team?
The formation of satellites called the A-Team.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's copyrighted. That can't be right.
No, it's the A-Team. You know.
Yeah.
Batman, Superman, Aquaman, Flash.
Flash, my favorite.
Swamp Man.
There's no Swamp Man.
You don't know Swamp Man?
There's no Swamp Man. Swamp Man, you made that up.
You don't know Swamp Man?
Can't forget Arrow.
Great. Okay, Arrow. Now, it's called the A-Train instead of the A-Team. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Which currently includes Aquaman. Okay. Aqua, CloudSat, Cloud Aerosol, LIDAR, and Infrared Pathfinder Satellite Observations.
Which stands for?
Calypso. And Aura satellites. Barrels across the equator each day at around 1:30 p.m. local time each afternoon, giving the constellation its name. The A stands for afternoon.
I would have never guessed.
No. Together, these four satellites contain 15 separate scientific instruments that observe the same path of Earth's atmosphere in service at a broad swath of wavelengths. At the front of the train, Aquaman carries instruments that produce measurements of temperature, water vapor, and rainfall. Next in line, CloudSat, baby. A cooperative effort between NASA and the Canadian Space Agency, the CSA, and Calypso, a joint effort of the French Space Agency, Central.
The CNES.
Yes. And NASA have high-tech lasers, laser and radar instruments that offer three-dimensional views of clouds and airborne particles called aerosols. At the caboose.
Who's at the caboose?
Aura has a suite of instruments that produce high-resolution vertical maps of greenhouse gases.
Okay. Did you know that Aqua is also one of a series of space-based platforms that are central to NASA Earth Science, a long-term study of the scope, dynamics, and implications of global change? And Aqua is a joint project of the United States, Japan, and Brazil.
Nice.
The Aqua program is composed of Aqua and other spacecraft, including Terra and Aura, and a data distribution system, ESDIS, and Mission Operations Center Implementation Team. Now, multidisciplinary teams of scientists and researchers from North and South America, Asia, Australia, and Europe will put this data to work, baby.
Right on.
So, what are we talking about next? So, we had ACE, we had AIM, Aqua. What's next?
Aquarius, baby.
Aquarius?
Well, however you want to say it.
I say it Aquarius.
If you want to get sexy, it's Aquarius.
Well, you get sexy on your own time, you hear me?
Yeah.
This is business. Now, business right now.
Aquarius is a focused effort to measure sea surface salinity and will provide the global view of salinity variability needed for climate studies. The mission, in collaboration between NASA and the Space Agency of Argentina. What's the overview?
Do you want me to throw in all the accents that you've been throwing in?
You can try.
Yeah, we'll try. And then I will fail and not succeed.
Give me a hick.
Okay, so salt.
Hick version.
No, I ain't doing that.
Okay, go on.
Well, I just said I ain't. I'm sorry. That was natural. That came out all on its own. I'm serious. We're Southern Indian. Salt. Most people view salt as it first and foremost of the most common condiment. Salt. That's most people see it as, right? So salt comes in many forms and has thousands of uses, from preserving food to manufacturing pharmaceuticals. Ooh. But salt also plays an important role in how the Earth system functions.
Right.
If you did not know. And just as salt flows through our veins, it also flows through Earth's ocean and its veins. The oceans, the lifeblood of Earth's climate system.
Uh-huh.
I mean, the ocean is roughly 3.5% salt, and the concentration of dissolved salts in the ocean is referred to as salinity, like you mentioned earlier, which varies across the globe and over time. How much of the Earth is made up of water? Any idea?
At least 75%.
Okay.
Yeah.
And how Do you have any idea of how much percent of that is salt water?
Oh, salt water?
Or is it mostly salt? It's mostly salt water.
It's in the 90s, high 90%.
Yeah. It's only, I think we talked about this one time. There's only like
1% of fresh water.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was only 1 or 2% of the entire Earth's water is fresh water, which is insane. So just as too much or too little salt in our diets affects our health, so too do high and low salinity have profound effects on how the ocean circulates, how fresh water cycles around Earth, and how our climate works. The concentration of salt on the ocean surface, the part of the ocean that actively exchanges water and heat with Earth's atmosphere, is a critical driver of ocean processes and climate variability. What are we doing with Aquarius to better understand what's going on?
Okay, well, to understand the regional and global processes that link variations in ocean salinity to changes in the global water cycle and how these variations influence ocean circulation and climate, NASA built and launched Aquarius, the primary instrument aboard the International Aquarius Satellite Observatory, which is SAC-D.
I'm sorry. I'm still like 10 years old inside.
Aquarius is making NASA's first space-based global...
I swear you switch from Italian to French to Jamaican to... it's great. I love it.
Global observations of ocean surface salinity. Flying 657 kilometers or 408 miles above Earth in a sun synchronous.
I like that.
We're going with that. A sun synchronous polar orbit that repeats every 7 days, baby.
Okay.
NASA Earth System Science Pathfinder mission is mapping global changes in ocean surface salinity with a resolution of 150 kilometers or 93 miles, showing how salinity changes from month to month, season to season, and year to year. Scientists are combining Aquarius data with in-water measurements to generate operational maps of the ocean salinity distribution.
You just got thrown out there, man.
What else you got for
SAC? Okay, remember what I said earlier. How many cups of coffee have you had? I'm telling you, people. Actually, I'm telling you, you got to be prepared for this.
Maybe it's about six if you want to go with the three or six, 6 ounce, 3 ounce. Per cup, so it's
at least four.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Like you're gonna deny it now. Okay, so the Aquarius SAC-D mission
SAC-D
was developed collaboratively.
Okay.
To collaborate between NASA and Argentina's space agency.
That sounds nasty.
Or the CONAE.
Conan.
To best meet the goals of each agency while giving priority to salinity measurements. CONA built complementary sensors to detect rain, sea ice, and wind speed, plus sea surface temperature sampling. CONA-sponsored instruments, including sensors from the French Space Agency and another from the Italian Space Agency, provide environmental data for a wide range of applications, including natural hazards, land processes, epidemiological studies, and air quality issues. What's up?
That's hot.
That's so hot. And, man...
Like a baby's arm holding an apple.
Let's not stop. Like a baby's arm holding an apple. Your tripod. I hope you guys
thank
get
you.
I hope thank you. You know, I really hope
thank
that.
Thank you.
Oh, that's a compliment.
Yeah, thank you.
I really hope that our listeners like hearing our stupid laughs.
Yeah.
Because that's pretty much 90% of our podcast.
And our cosmic verbalness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, sum it up, everybody. We got a train watching out over the Earth, watching out for you like the A-Team.
With Aquaman watching over at the head of the train.
Yeah, and then, you know, they all have their certain powers. So we will bring it back for some more.
This is just part one. Part one of the missions, right?
Yeah.
We could only squeeze in so much time and
we're running out right now. I mean, we got to attend to other things.
Come on,
the ship. I mean, that pizza. Just, all right. Neil's all got right. that pizza ready.
All
All right, wrap it up.
Okay. I'm waiting. All right, thank you, everybody. This has been a wonderful episode.
I'm going to throw this out there.
Okay.
Make sure to follow us on Instagram.
Yes.
At The Galaxy Geeks. Just a simple fact a day. And also, subscribe to our podcast.
Sure.
Do it. You'll get notifications on every episode. We pump these out every week. Come back for more. Okay, so this has been The Galaxy Geeks. I'm Brandon Stewart.
I'm Louis Reagan.
And we bid you adieu, signing out of the cosmos.
In the name of the Galactic Senate of the Republic, you are under arrest, Chancellor.
Are you threatening me, Master Jedi?
The Senate will decide your fate.
I am the Senate.
Not yet.
It's treason, then.